Well, good morning. Welcome to Church Torrey Pines. So good to have you here. My name is Todd, and it is an honor to be able to share with you for the next few minutes. I serve as pastor in residence here, and just so glad that you're here as we continue our series, like Tyler said, Best Year Ever. How many of you believe it's going to be the best year ever, 2019? Yeah? Yeah, that's like eight of you clapping. That's great. That's great. A year and a half ago, God dropped this dream on my heart, on my wife and I's heart, to start a brand new church here in San Diego. The only problem was we lived on the East Coast. We had jobs on the East Coast. We owned a house on the East Coast. All of our friends and family lived in that part of the country. And so we were like kind of a little confused on how all this was going to work out. So I met with my pastor. And called him up, met him, and I told him, I said, "Hey, Pastor Greg, I think God wants me to start a church." And he looked at me, and he was like, "I think you can do it." I was like, "That's real encouraging, man." Like, and then he said, "Where do you want to go?" I said, "Man, I want to go to San Diego." He was like, "I wouldn't go there." I was like, "Pastor Greg, why wouldn't you go to San Diego?" He said, it's too irreligious. People don't go to church there. But hey, at Torrey Pines, people go to church here, right? And he said, "You know, I wouldn't go there. I wouldn't do that." But he was very gracious to me. He said, "Todd, if you submit to my leadership, if you submit to my mentor, and if you allow me to lead you through this process of starting a brand new church, we'll see where it goes." And so I was like, "Okay, I'm all in." So I met him at his office. I called him. I texted him. I was like, every time I had a question, I was like, "Dude, what do you think about this? Well, what do you think about that?" And he led me through this journey of starting a church. But I can tell you, even to this day, from the very beginning, this process has taken one thing from me. It's taken some courage. It's taken some courage to leave the familiarity of where I grew up and all of my friends and the comfort of having a paycheck from an established church to launch out into the unknown, into a city that I didn't know anyone there, to start a new church. But this is the dream that God placed on my heart. And so this morning, I don't know what your dream is. I don't know what you're believing God for this year. I don't know what your fears are. I don't know what your insecurities are. But here's what I can tell you this morning. It's going to take courage for you to step into what God has for you. It's going to take courage. You have this sense inside of you, in your bones, that there's something more. There's something more. And I can tell you right now that God's going to do something in your life. God's going to perform a miracle in your life this year that he's never done before. It's going to be a miracle of a year, 2019, for you. And you sense it. You feel it. But it's going to take courage for you to take steps. It's going to take courage for you to step into the unknown, to step into the unfamiliar. But we're all smart people, right? We know that it's not just going to take courage. It's going to take a guide. It's going to take a guide. It's going to take guides in our lives to lead us on this journey that God is taking us into. And so this morning, as we're continuing this conversation of having the best year ever, we're talking about finances. Thank you, Mingo. Thank you so much. So glad that you chose me to give this message today. But here's the deal. This conversation is no different, right? Because it's going to take courage for us to have this conversation. It's going to take courage for you to begin to have this conversation about finances and looking at your finances. And I just want to serve for the next 25 minutes. I just want to serve as your guide. I'm going to be your Sherpa today as we talk about money. And I looked up courage in the dictionary, and this is what it says. Courage is the ability to do something that frightens you. Or in other words, the ability to do something in spite of fear. That's courage. And so let's start by looking at some common fears that we all have when we're talking about money. If you got an outline, go ahead and pull that out. You can follow along really easy with this outline. And there's some fears that we all have in talking about finances. I mean, this is one of the things that we shouldn't talk about, right? sex, politics, and money. But we're going to talk about it, but there's some major fears. And the first one, if you're taking notes, you can write this down. It's the fear of pressure. It's the fear of pressure. And some of you, you know, you've experienced this firsthand. You've been in a church that used manipulation. They used pressure when talking about money. And I can just tell you right up front, here at Torrey Pines, we don't do that. we don't do pressure, okay? And we're not in a financial crisis. And Pastor Mingo does not need a new private jet. The old one works just fine, all right? So we're good. We're good. There's no pressure. But we all feel this. The second fear that we all have when talking about money, especially at church, is shame. Look at this next verse on the screen, Proverbs 23 and verse 5. In the blink of an eye, wealth disappears, for it will sprout wings and fly away like an eagle. How many of you have had wealth that sprouted wings like an eagle and flew away? I love it. How many of us remember the year 2008 or 2009? Anyone remember a time when your 401k turned into a 201k? I don't know why I'm laughing at this. Anyone remember a time where, you know, we never make bad decisions in the moment, do we? It's always a good decision in the moment, but afterwards we find out that it wasn't really a good decision. How many of you have made you thought you were making a good decision, but you made a financially bad call, and it stung, and it hurt, and it took years and years and years to dig out of us. You see, we have shame when it comes to our financial mistakes in our past. The third reason for fear surrounding this topic of money is failure. Failure. Shannon and I, we've been married for 18 years this coming May, and I can tell you we've made hundreds of financial mistakes during our marriage. I wish we had like another 3 hours. We could share all of them and do a discussion on each failure. But we got married in 2001, and my parents are Midwesterners, but I grew up in Charleston, South Carolina, which is a nice little town in the southeast. And in Charleston in the early 2000s, man, the real estate market was booming, okay? Like a lot of areas in the country at that time. And so being newlyweds in 2001, 2002, we wanted to get in the game, okay? And so we wanted to invest. We wanted to get in the game. And so I would go to banks and try to get mortgages for some properties. Now, my last name is Phelps, all right? So I don't know if they thought when I walked into the bank, like, my first name was Michael, but it wasn't. I can assure you that I'm not a rich celebrity swimmer. I was, at the time, a poor pastor. My wife was a paralegal who made way more money than I did. But every time I walked into a bank, they kept on giving me money. We ended up with $1 million in real estate, which does not sound like a lot here in La Jolla, right? But it was to us in 2001, 2002, and then 2008 hit. And I wish I could tell you, I mean, I can't really even express to you how much I wish I could tell you that it all worked out, that we sold those properties, that we reinvested the money, that we diversified and we put money aside. But we didn't. It was a massive failure that took us years and years and years to get out of. And see, this morning, if you're here today and you've made some mistakes financially, maybe you're currently not managing your money well, maybe you have some shame in your past, I just want to tell you right up front, I just want to first of all welcome you to a community of misfits here at Torrey Pines, all right? You are in good company because the people around you are more messed up than you are. You see, we've all made mistakes in our past, especially when it comes to our finances. We all have shame. We all have regrets. But this is the beauty of the gospel. This is the beauty of Jesus. See, as we gather here today, we're not celebrating the mistakes that we've made. We're celebrating a God who, in spite of our mistakes, loves us so much that he came to earth, died on a cross, and rose from the dead, all for love, so that we could have a new life, so that we could have a new hope. So here's the beauty of the gospel. See, this is what separates Christianity from every other religion. All other religions tell us what we have to do to get to God. Christianity is the only religion that tells us what God did to get to us. He moved heaven and earth, and he sent his son to die for you and for me, all for love. And see, this is the divine exchange. You see, we today can bring all of our past, we can bring all of our struggles, we can bring all of our financial mistakes to Jesus, and as an exchange, we get grace. We get love, not because we deserve it, because he gives it freely. I love this next passage on your outline. It's found in Proverbs chapter 30 in verses 8 and 9. And this passage really talks about this financial sweet spot in life. It's really a prayer. I want to read it to you. Do not make me poor or rich, but give me each day what I need. For if I have too much, I might forget that you are the one who provides, saying, who is the eternal one? Or if I do not have enough, I might become hungry and turn to stealing, and thus dishonor the good name of my God. Now, I know some of us have prayed this prayer. God, I want to live in the financial sweet spot of life called winning the lottery. But this is not the prayer that we find in Proverbs. God, don't give me too much that I forget about you. And don't give me too little that I distrust you. Let me live in this balanced middle. But this has been a very hard place to live, especially for the global church. And over the years and really over the centuries, we've done a bad job of talking about finances, talking about money. And what we've done throughout time is we've created extremes. And if you're taking notes, you can write this down. The first extreme that we've created is the prosperity gospel. And this says that if you love God, you should be rich. And this is promoted by Christian TV personalities with nice suits and big hair that say, you know, if you make Jesus your choice, you will drive a Rolls Royce. Just send me $1,000. That's the prosperity gospel. And the prosperity gospel looks through this lens of materialism at the scriptures. And it's a distortion. It's not a whole gospel. And the prosperity gospel is driven by greed. But it's also created another extreme, which is the poverty gospel. And this says that if you love God, you should be poor. And this is a really interesting theology because it almost sounds holy. Right? I mean, if you listen to this, like the less that I have, the more that I'm pleasing to God, or the less that I have, the closer that I can be to God. But that's not true. It's an extreme. And it's not about how little or how much you have. It's about how we view and manage and prioritize the resources that God gives us. You see, the Bible teaches neither a prosperity gospel or a poverty gospel. The scriptures teach a generosity gospel. And the generosity gospel is driven by grace. And there is no one who got this more than the first church. The first church, when they saw how Jesus lived, and they saw how Jesus died, and they saw how Jesus was resurrected from the grave, they were so transformed by this. They had such a revelation of the grace of God on their lives that Jesus came to do what they could not, to take away their sin, to give them a new life, to transform them in every area of their lives. They were so transformed by this that it impacted even the way they viewed their money, how they managed their money, how they prioritized their finances. I love this quote. It's by Timothy Keller. He's a pastor, author, and he says it this way. The early church was strikingly different from the culture around it in this way. The pagan society was stingy with its money and promiscuous with its body. A pagan gave no one their money and practically gave everyone their body. And the Christians came along and gave practically no one their body, and they gave practically everyone their money. And so people on the outside of the first church were just like looking in going, what is going on? Why are you so stingy with your sexuality? but you're generous with your money. Where does that attitude come from? 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 1 and 2 says this, "Now, brothers and sisters, let me tell you about the amazing gift of God's grace that's happening throughout the churches in Macedonia. Even in the face of severe anguish and hard times, their elation and poverty have overflowed into a wealth of generosity." See, it's not about how much you have. It's about being impacted by what Jesus has done for us. Having this revelation of grace in our lives that we can't help but live generous lives. Mark chapter 8, verse 36 and 37 says this, "And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul? Is anything worth more than your soul?" It's interesting that we go to a dentist to check on our teeth. We go to a doctor to check on our body. Have you ever wondered who we go to check on our soul? Have you ever wondered how your soul is doing? And as we read the scriptures, we see that God's actually given us mirrors for our soul. For example, my marriage, you know, is my marriage, but my marriage to my wife, how I treat my wife, how I serve my wife, how I love my wife, it is a mirror to tell me how I'm doing on the inside. My relationship with my kids, how much I love them, how much I serve them, how much I parent them and lead them is my relationship with my kids, but it's also a mirror for my soul. Did you know that your money is a mirror? It will tell you how you're doing on the inside. Jesus said it this way, Matthew 6 and verse 21, "Wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be." Jesus teaches us that our heart follows our money. Have you ever wondered why God says to give 10%? Back to him? It's called tithing. Like, why would God say that? Does God need my money? It's not like God's up in heaven going, "I wonder how I'm going to pay the light bill this month." No, he's never said that. Why? Because he doesn't need our money. He wants our heart. He wants my heart. And so we have to live generously. And so let me just give you three simple steps. These are three simple steps. You can write these down. Three simple steps. If we're going to have the best year ever, if 2019 is going to be a miracle of a year, we have to do these things financially. Number one, you can write this down. We have to spend with a plan. Spend with a plan. I was talking to my wife the other night about our finances, and in our conversation, I used the B word, budget. It's budget, all right? It's kind of a dirty word, right? And so we don't like to talk about it, but when we spend with a plan, we spend on a budget. I was having dinner at a friend's house once, and I was there a little bit early, so I went into the kitchen, and I was helping them take food from the kitchen into the dining room. And so I walked up to the refrigerator, and so with my height, when I walk up to a normal refrigerator, I don't look at the doors. My line of sight is at the top of the refrigerator. And so I walk up to their fridge, and I look at the top of their fridge, and I just, like, have you ever said something that you didn't really mean to say? It just, like, came out of you? And it was, like, extremely rude, but you just said it? And so I walk up to their fridge, and I'm looking at the top of their fridge, and I just blurt out, "Gross! Disgusting! This is nasty!" Like, and my friends were like so taken back by this. They were like, "Well, Todd, what's going on? What's the deal?" And I'm sitting there. I'm like looking at their fridge. Like they have. I'm trying not to exaggerate. There's a half inch of like dust and filth and skin particles. I'm trying to think about all the things that are on top of the, who knows what is on top of the refrigerator? It's nasty. And so like, I look instantly jump into like solve it mode. Have you ever done that? Like I'm like in someone else's house, but I have to solve this problem. So I go and get cleaner. I get a rag. I get the vacuum out. Like, I'm cleaning this thing. And so let me ask you this. Are my friends, are they dirty people? No. Like, they're very, very clean people. Like, do my friends, do they like just collecting dust? No. They're knee freaks. They like it clean. They're just not that tall. You see, it's the same with a budget. A budget gives us financial tallness. Some of you today, let's just be honest. You don't have to raise your hand. You are in a financial train wreck. Is it because you like it messy? Is it because you like disorder? No. You just don't have the financial height that you need. And see, this is what a budget does. A budget gives us financial tallness to see everything that's coming in, everything that's going out, and it helps us spend on a plan. If we're going to have an awesome 2019, we got to live on a budget. We have to spend with a plan. If you're taking notes, write this down. Secondly, we have to save for our future. We got to save for our future. Look at this next verse. Proverbs 21 and verse 20, the wise store up choice food and olive oil, but fools gulp theirs down. I love that verse. The wise store up and the fool gulps it all down. Have you ever met someone who knew the future? Anybody? No. No one knows the future. That's why we need savings. Because we need to be prepared for what's going to happen. What's going to happen this afternoon? What's going to happen this week, this year? We don't know. I love this. There's two types of savings. You can write these down on the side on your outline. There's emergency savings. And this is a great quote. An emergency savings fund turns a crisis into an inconvenience. Man, that's gold. I want an inconvenience this year. I don't want a crisis. That's what savings does for us. Savings safeguards us in that way. There's also long-term savings. I'm not going to go into all the nuances of investments and retirement and all that, but on the back of your outline, you can check out these resources. We've collected and curated some resources for you on your outline. Circle some of those. Go to Amazon today, order one of these books or borrow it from a friend, and dive in to savings and spending, and make an investment in your life this week, this month, this year, and take your savings up a couple notches. You can also sign up for Financial Peace University today, and that's a great resource. Proverbs 13:11 says this: wealth from get rich schemes quickly disappear. Wealth from hard work grows over time. We have to save for the future. Lastly, we have to give back to God. Give back to God. Proverbs 3:9-10. I love this passage. This is a promise with a condition. The promise is verse 10. The terms are in verse 9. It's the way a lot of God's promises works in our lives. And it says this: honor the Lord with your wealth and with the best part of everything you produce, then he will fill your barns with grain, and your vats will overflow with good wine. Translation here, God will bless you financially. God will bless us financially when we honor him with our wealth, with the best part of everything we produce. You know, giving is connected to the big idea of this entire message. It's on your outline as well. The path to our best year ever financially begins with recognizing that I'm a manager, not an owner. I'm a manager, not an owner. You know, people tell me all the time, they're like, Todd, you're so tall. You know, like, I had anything to do with it. You know, like, I'm like, well, my dad was tall. My mom's tall. Our family's tall. We just make tall people. I don't know. And isn't it interesting that there's so little in life that we have control over? I didn't control what family I was born into. I didn't control what time that I was born or where I was born. And what's even more interesting is this next passage in Deuteronomy 8 and verse 17 and 18. It says this: he did all this so you would never say to yourself, I have achieved this wealth. I have achieved this wealth with my own strength and energy. Remember the Lord your God. He is the one who gives you power to be successful. I love that. Not only was I not in control of my genetics, where I was born, my family, when I was born, even the power to be successful, the power to create wealth was a gift from God. You see, at the end of the day, we are managers. We're not owners. And if this year is going to be our best year, if this year is going to be a miracle of a year, we got to spend on a plan. We got to save for our future. And we got to give back to God. Let me ask you this morning, what is your next step? What is your next step? You know, when we were talking about the mistakes and failure and shame, some of you today, some of you, you haven't ever really forgiven yourself from the past. You haven't really forgiven yourself from that past mistake that you made. You blew it. God's forgiven you, but you haven't forgiven yourself. Now, we're going to take communion here in just a moment.